ॐ गणानां त्वा गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नोतिभिः सीदसादनं ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः वेदान्तडिण्डिमास्तत्त्वम् एकमुद्घोषयन्ति यत् आस्तां पुरस्तात् तत्तेजः दक्षिणामूर्तिसंहितम्. So I believe we're on the 73rd verse today. So let's read it first. So part by part. नकाम्यप्रतिषिद्धाभिः क्रियाभिर्मोक्षवासना ईश्वरानुग्रहात् सा स्यात् इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः. न काम्यप्रतिषिद्धाभिः क्रियाभिर्मोक्षसा वासना ईश्वरानुग्रहात् सा स्यात् इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः. So the translation given here is, liberation cannot be gained by performing actions inspired by desire or by avoiding the prohibited ones. It can be gained by the grace of the Lord, declares Vedanta. So this verse here is talking about mumukshutvam, about longing for liberation, longing to be free. And of course, this is something that everybody has. Every living being wants to be free. No living being wants to be bound. We see it, any plant you put somewhere, you want it to grow in a certain direction, you cut it back, it wants to grow back there. It's not going to listen to you, right? As a kid, I remember a friend of mine, he was saying his father would cut the hedges. He said, can't the plant learn just to grow in this place? The plant doesn't want to, wants to grow more in that direction. You're not going to. So even the plant wants to. Little insect that you want to catch it to put it outside because it's buzzing around the house and it's running away from you. What to talk about, you know, more intelligent, more developed beings like other animals, or of course, like us. So it's a net by nature. And we want to be free. By nature, we want this. But the question is, how do we go about it? Are we doing it in a wise way or not? Like this. How many people have really found freedom like this? So this is a very important thing. And so this is what it's talking about. Now, in order to study Vedanta, in order to be a qualified adhikari, qualified student of Vedanta, Adi Guru Shankara, he brought up that there are four prerequisites, four things that one has to develop, qualities one has to develop like this. We call this sadhana chatushtaya. Those who have studied Tattva Bodha, we went through it there in detail. And actually, beginning of the year, on Sundays, we're going to have a Tattva Bodha class, which will give a nice overview. If you haven't done, I very much recommend, because it gives a very nice overview of the vision of Vedanta, so it makes it much easier to understand when we're talking about a lot of these things. So in any case, so these fourfold, we call so fourfold virtues like this. So these four means for liberation or fourfold virtues are, the first is viveka. Viveka is discrimination. So of course, discrimination in day-to-day is very useful, right? I'm very tired. I shouldn't just be driving. I should stop and rest because I don't want to be in an accident, right? Or if somebody does drink, okay, then their friend will drive them home from the event. That's simple, right? The simple viveka for day-to-day. I should do this because it's the right thing. This thing is crooked. This thing isn't honest. I shouldn't do. Those are simple. But here, viveka is subtler. Here it's atma anatma viveka, discrimination between self and non-self, between what I am in essence and what I'm not in essence, meaning what is there naturally, what is there inherent, and what is there just conditionally there, right? So this is the viveka, atma anatma viveka. We've gone through that a lot more in other classes, but this is the first one. Second one is vairagya. Vairagya is dispassion. And dispassion meaning not that I don't like having a negative attitude towards things of the world. Not this, but understanding. And understanding what things are. Okay, like we talked so much in the past about, okay, I think when I get this possession, when I get this position, when I achieve this goal, then I'll be okay, then I'll be happy, right? Now, it's true, I will have maybe some more sense of happiness or some sense that I'm something, but that, how long does it last and how much does it really make me content, happy, secure, all these things? So vairagya is looking, really understanding, seeing how the world, everything in the world, everything's a passing show. If I can't hold on to it, you know, it's not going to totally fulfill me. If I try to be fulfilled because of conditions, then it's temporary, it's not going to give me what I'm really seeking. This is, you can say, the nice way to say it, if you're doing well because of the set up, very soon you'll be upset, like this. So this is vairagya, the second one. And these are things we develop. And again, it's an internal thing you develop. It's not some sort of an ability. I'm learning to sing. I'm learning a language. Those is more something external. I'm learning to do something. Here it's an observation, through observation and understanding. So it's not even a learning of something. A language I learn, there is some understanding, but there's a lot of other things involved in it, meaning that a lot of information. Here, information may be useful, as we discuss, in order to understand, but the main thing is an understanding. Understanding that, you know, that things in the world will give me some pleasure, some happiness for a little while, and it goes by, and that's not really what I'm seeking. That's an understanding. It's not information like that. So this is the second. Third is what's called shatsampati. Shatsampati is sixfold virtues. And this is really mind management or control of the mind. That the mind, the inner instrument, needs to be more peaceful, needs to not just be running out after things, more balanced, being very dutiful, doing whatever I need to do happily. All these things are there, which, because the mind has to be a prepared instrument for this. So like what people take as Raja Yoga, this one can be used, a lot of Raja Yoga can be put under this category if you'd want, but the instrument has to be prepared. If I want to look into these things, but I have an unruly mind that gets very upset at anything that comes and goes, right? Small things come and go, that has a lot of expectations, I really want to run around and do so many things, it's going to be very difficult to inquire. So the mind has to be rendered prepared like this. Okay. Karma Yoga also. Karma Yoga Raja Yoga can be put into here for preparation. Then the fourth is what he's discussing here, is mumukshutvam. people usually say burning desire for liberation, longing for liberation. This is what this mumukshutvam is. Now here, in the verse, he's also clarifying what mumukshutvam is not. Because what is it is also what it's not. We have to know what something is, we have to know what it isn't as well. So he says, kamya and the shiddha karmas. Like this, kamya karmas meaning an action born out of desire. The desire, it's not action born of desire. This is, doesn't go hand in hand with this. Because an action born out of desire, where does it come from? This is something different. I remember Swami Premananji in Uttarkashi. One time he was saying, you should have one desire, and that desire is to be desireless. So this kind of desire, spiritual desire, is not the same as the other ones, because the other ones are based on I, the individual. Right? I want to live more comfortable, have something more for myself. Right? I want my family to be well. I want my son, daughter to be successful. Right? I want to be able to achieve something. All these things. I want to be healthier. All these things too. Although health, of course, isn't for, if I want to inquire, I'm not healthy, can't be as easy. So as an instrument, I say, yes, I want my instrument to be prepared so I can inquire. That's different. That I want my instrument, meaning body-mind, to be healthy so that I can go and do many things and enjoy. That's a different, a means for something else. So what is the mean? When you have a means for it, you have a desire for the means. What is the means for? It's the end that really you're desiring. So I want to be healthy so I can look into this. One of the Shanti mantras from Upanishads, Apayantu Mangani Vakparanas Chakshurotram, praise, may my body, my instrument be healthy and strong. Why? So that I can inquire into this like this. So in any case, so other desires, they're based on I, the individual, like this. Where here it's, in order to be free from what? From I, the individual. So the independence people are usually after is the independence, what we call freedom for I. That I can do what I want, right? That I can go where I want feeling, you know, feeling that I'm not being obstructed. That I can feel safe where I'm living. I can have what I want, things like this. This is freedom for I. This is for the individual. Of course, you know, the individual can never be fully, as an individual, you're never fully free. It's not possible in that way. But the thing is, this is one thing. But here it's not in freedom for I, for the individual, freedom from I, from the individual. Because as long as I identify as the individual, then I am bound. And having the individual be more free, okay, now I'm more free, I can do what I want. Now I'm bound by the whims of my mind. Right? Just by being able to do what I want, now I want to do this, but it doesn't work how I want. Or I do get what I want, then I'm not happy after some time, I want something else. I'm bound by my own mind. If my own mind is if my own mind gets elated by something, meaning later it'll also go down. Pairs of all, you can't have one without the other. I want it always to be warm, not cold. It doesn't work. There's heat, there's cool, there's cold. So I want to be happy. I have a happy mind. I want sukha, but I don't want dukkha. I don't want sadness. You can't have happiness without sadness. It doesn't exist. So here, it's freedom from this whole thing. This is what mumukshutvam, desire for liberation, desire to be free from this sense of limitation, from the individual, which this is really where I'm bound. Other things don't bind me. They bind me as long as I identify with them. That's the problem. Not the thing in itself, but my identifying with it. That's what causes the problem. So this is what this is discussing. So here also, he talked in the verse about the kamya. kamya karma, desire. I do actions out of desire. I have desires. Now what happens is desire for anything else, then meaning that I won't be quiet until the mind saying, I won't be quiet until that I get what I want like this, until things are as I like. So it pushes me to do. Now, of course, it can be pushed. I can be doing, having desire and do actions that on this that are more righteous or that are not getting in anybody's way. I earn my living in a, you know, in an ethical way, and I give some money to charity, and then I also get to enjoy some things. I get to enjoy some luxuries, some things like that, comforts. So that way, it's not disturbing anybody, but still, it is. It's still running after. I want this individual to be comfortable and happy in a worldly sense, and that doesn't solve the problem like this. And what happens is a lot is put into this, that even the religion then is brought in for this. Religion is, I pray to the gods so that I and mine will be in a better place like this. So I'm using the religion for the limit. I'm going to the unlimited and want that to affect the limited. So it's instead of I want the unlimited for the unlimited's sake. If I just want it for the unlimited sake, then I can free myself. But no, I want it for this. There was one video somebody once posted that this somebody sends her elderly father a gift for whatever Christmas, and then she calls him and says, "Oh, how did my gift arrive?" And he's working in the kitchen, chopping the vegetables. "Oh yes, it's really wonderful. I really needed a new cutting board." And then you see the cutting board he's using is an iPad. He didn't know what an iPad is. "Oh, okay, it's a nice thing my daughter sent me for the holidays. I really needed it," like this. So the iPad can be used as a cutting board, but it really is meant for something. There's so much more if you want. So one prays to the God, and to pray to the God to expand my vision like this, but not to limit myself. But here, by praying to the God to help with my worldly concerns, worldly desire, what happens is that way I'm validating them, first of all. I validate the worldly desire. If there's a child that is scared of the ghost, right? If you say, okay, be brave, face the ghost, okay, or the ghost is friendly, or all these things. No, I'm not so sure if he's friendly, like this. And, you know, if you just say this, the ghost will run away. You know, say this mantra, say this prayer, the ghost will run away, like this. You're still validating the ghost. There'll still be some insecurity. By negating the ghost, where's the problem? Problem is gone. So taking the God in for that, let me take the God in for helping with my desire, for helping my insecurity in this, then meaning that I'm validating those things. I'm validating, right? Now is very difficult times in this. Let me do prayers to the God so that it will help to overcome in this. Well, I'm validating the individual and the situation this instead of seeing beyond it. So then I'm validating and strengthening that. Why should I strengthen that? I want to see beyond it, that I'm not this individual like this. The dream, you know, the only way to get out of the dream is waking up, not doing things within the dream to make the dream a more comfortable place like that. Again, we have to do things to take care in this, we do. But we go too much out of our way, then we're getting more and more caught up in that like this, in this way. And then also, so there's desires going together with desires or fears. I have so many fears. And then overcoming the fear, what happens is I have to question and look into it. There's fear of death, for instance. Okay, I'm afraid to die. I have to look into it. Okay, fear of death. First of all, it's a fact, right? Anybody that's born is going to die. It's a fact. So should there be something that's a fact to be afraid of? What is just fact, part of nature? Why? It's just how things are. And then I have to look into it. Okay, there is death. Fine. What do you mean by death? What is death? Who dies? Right. Who? You'll say, well, Dhruvasya, he, how is it? Dhruvasya, I forget the verse in Gita, but says that that which is born will surely die. But that which isn't born, is it going to die? So as I born, you know, what do you mean by I was born? So if I look into, more and more closely, what do you mean by, then the more one looks into, then the more it helps to overcome. Because actually to try to get the security, when one is wants to be secure, by seeking security, we're not going to become secure. You know, doesn't mean, okay, so I won't have medical insurance, I won't have this. Okay, we need some minimal things you do, because just practical thing. Then when you have to go to a doctor, you can go and take care, no problem, like this. But I'm not, if I seek, I seek and try to find security within the world, I'll never find it. No matter what I do, the individual is something that's an insecure thing. There's no such thing as a fully secure individual, because the individual is something that is prone to disease, prone to different problems. Right, this has a beginning, has an end. That's how it is. So the only way to be free from that is to really look into it. Really look closely into it. I remember in college, in psychology course, there's this, what is the name? Maybe one of you can give the name of the person. Psychologist, very famous, made this pyramid. You first need to have, I think, the material or wealth, independent security. Then you can get to some subtler one. This was his idea, like this. Maybe one of you knows the name of this famous psychologist. In any case, so when this was said in the class, after a little while, because of where I, my background, where I came from, then I said, you know, I disagree with him. I said, you'll have, the only way you have the material security is you'll understand there is no material security. Then you won't be seeking it, then you'll be free from it, which is what Vedanta is saying, like this. So I've seen the most secure people I've seen are the ones who are totally free from this idea of trying to get worldly security, because they're beyond it, like this. Mostly some monks that I've seen, because they know they're being taken care of by something higher. Not even that they're being taken care of. If you identify with that, you know you're not body mind. Okay, what is there to worry about, like this? So in this case, so that we take, instead of trying to deal with these issues of fear and insecurity by doing something to abate the insecurity, the fear, looking into them, understanding, because in jnana yoga, what happens is people are mostly wanting to do something. Let me do. Give me something I can do in order to take care of this problem. But the thing is, any worldly problem you take care of, once it's taken care of, what'll happen is the next problem is waiting to, next wave is waiting to come. Right? Next wave. It doesn't end. Right? So it's unresolvable. Just like in the dream, dream itself, unresolvable in the dream. So the things, if we look into it and understand it, then we can, then by understanding the problem in itself isn't a problem anymore. Like that. Children come with some big problem, and you know, the thing's a big problem, the older sibling took the ball, or something, and for us it's just, you know, what is it? Means nothing. It's, you know, we understand, oh, what a silly thing, what, you know, why, that thing, we know they'll get over it soon when they get a little bigger, that it doesn't matter. So the same way, like this, for the spiritually mature, they see most of us and see how we're just caught up in all sorts of nonsense like this, like the kids. So in any case, so that's some points about. Now here it says by kamya karma, actions which I want to do out of desire for something, and also says nishiddha karma in here, because he says kamya nishiddha bihi, by kriya bihi, by desirous actions, and also nishiddha means actions that are not to be done, that are not correct to be done, the wrong thing to do, or immoral or something of this sort. So this, of course, also won't help. And why would somebody do? Out of ignorance or out of strong desire, right? I very much want something, so I'll even break the rules to get. It's not going to help. So that also falls within kamya karma in some way like this. Now what happens is, again, the more the kamya, the desire, that's based on I'm the individual. Because I feel that I'm not complete. As an individual, I'm not complete, so I need something to bring that I will become more complete. When I get that, then I will be complete. But the completeness doesn't come with that, right? So so what happens is, okay, so in our activities, then as we want to grow spiritual, if you want, then first of all, the nishiddha karma, I have to be very aware any actions that are not right to do, that not what I should be done, should be dropped first. Those first casualty, that's the first casualty to just start, because it's counterproductive. Cutting corners in order to get somewhere in the long run does not help. Does not help. It makes the doesn't make the mind a peaceful place. So that's something we should first of all discard. Then kamya karma, we're left still with I'm doing actions out of desire. Those, first of all, they should be minimized and done in the most dharmic, righteous way, like this. And then eventually, as we mature, then those slowly have to be dropped as well. And again, dropping something, I don't drop it because just out of a discipline. Some discipline, of course, is good, but out of understanding these things, more and more would drop away. Because I will see more and more that, okay, fulfilling desire doesn't help get me there. And it just creates the habit in my mind. Now I'm dependent on that. Now I'm dependent on doing something in that way. So slowly, slowly, this also, as I mature, has to drop. And then what's left is what's called nimitta karmas, what's needed to do, my duties. I do them completely as needed, like this. That's how the mind becomes a much more simple and peaceful place, because then I don't have an agenda in doing things, because I'm just doing what's needed, as needed, like this. And as the mind becomes freer from the desire, the mind is more peaceful. And here it said one can achieve this mumukshutvam, one can have this this longing for liberation by Ishvara Anugraha, meaning by the grace of the God, grace of the right of the totality, like this. And then how does that work? I have to lessen the idea of the individual, then it becomes clear. So the more I do my actions, what's needed, as needed, and I do it with what's called Ishvarpana Buddhi, I'm doing it not in order to get something, not for an agenda, but for offering, you can just say offering to the God, offering to the totality, what's needed. The result isn't mine, like this. And whatever comes my way then, I see it as prasada buddhi, meaning what is given to me is what's needed. This is the God's giving to me, what's needed for me, like this. I accept it, like this. This is the whole idea that started when one goes and offers something, goes does some offering in the temple, then they're given some prasad, something. That's really the prasad is the mental state, prasada buddhi. The mind becomes more peaceful. An external token just as part of ritual to point that out. But then it starts to become a very big thing in everything. So starting to give so much, temples are competing and who gives, you know, more sweets, and people buy big ladus from temples, all these kinds of things. But that's not really the essence, what it's for. The essence is the mental state one gets from it, the peace of mind from it. So by doing what's needed, doing completely, doing as an offering, then this grace comes, that less I'm running after things of the world, more naturally the longing for spiritual longing will be there. More naturally it'll develop then in this way. Because the individual is slowly withdrawing from the idea of being this individual. So this is where it's going to help to grow in this direction. So it's not here where Adiguru Shankara is saying that Ishwaranugrahat from the grace of God, from grace of Ishwara, sasyat, one will get this mumukshutvam. It doesn't mean I'll just pray and it'll fall from the sky. Oh, please give me, you know. Now, of course. But when somebody does pray for something, praying for, yes, help me along the path that I will have these develop the qualities that will help for this. Then the means is for liberation, not the means for a worldly thing. Means is not for the individual, for the ego, but for negating the ego. So that's something very different. That longing isn't coming from the ego itself, because the ego itself is the problem, is the issue that is binding me like this. So Swami Vivekananda, it's said about him that when he came to Ramakrishna, and then Ramakrishna was told him, you go to the temple and you pray for the God to take care of your mother and sister, because he knew this Vivekananda's, you know, he's going to live like a monk, so you know what's going to be. His father isn't alive. How will his sister and mother be taken care of? So I told him, you go to the mother, because Ramakrishna was mother devotee, and you pray to her, take care of your mother and sister. So he went to the temple. He came back. I'm sorry, I went in front of the mother. I just couldn't ask for that. I'm telling you, you have to go pray for that. So go back to the temple and pray that they are taken care of. So he went again. He came back, said, I'm really sorry, I went. That just couldn't come to my mind when I was in front of the mother. So he sends him again. So then he says, when I go there, I can only ask, please give me dispassion and discrimination. I can't ask for anything else like this. So this was, in the end, a test that Ramakrishna was giving him. I want to pray that these people be taken care of. The God doesn't know these people need to be taken care of. You want the God to take care of these people? What about all the other people in this way? So really, the infinite, we're seeking the infinite. The infinite, we can seek the grace. Let me go to the infinite. Now, not, don't strengthen myself as an individual like this. Very similar thing. Very similar idea to this. Swami Premananda Ji in Uttarkashi. He said that his mother came, after he became a monk, after some time his mother came and visited. And she was saying to him about my son, talking this way. And she said, what do you mean I'm your son? I'm doing fine. What about all the other poor children, you know, back where you're living in your area? They're not your children, they're all your children. Why am I just your son like this? He scolded her. And he said she went back and she's became very charitable, took care of a lot of children that, you know, that were poor, orphan, or different things like this, really took care and really learned and grew a lot like this, because we have such a narrow thing, this is mine, like this. This is mine. There's a, in Sanskrit, mine can be said mama, or can be said me or mama, either way. So there's one saying, the Subhashita. Subhashita, where it's a saying, but written in a poetic way. One Subhashita, which in Sanskrit says, people say me, right? My house, my family, my life, my me. And then because they keep saying meh, 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 it's like a sheep, meh, meh, meh. So the wolf of time was going to gobble them up. And it does, because whatever is mine, the wolf of time is going to attack and get rid of, and then what will be with me? Like this. So again, so for the whole thing here, grace of the grace is that this is what I'm seeking, because the grace is there. Laws of nature are there. You just have to, you know, I'll tell my neighbor, oh my God, you're having, you don't have as much of an electric bill, and when PG&E turned, for some reason, cut the electricity you still have, wow, you're so lucky. He says, yeah, well, I paid and got solar panels. You can put solar panels too. I'll say, really? So the energy of the sun is there. You just have to harness it. The grace is there, but we're not looking for it. We're too caught up in the pettiness of this individual. This is what happens. And then we say, I want to be free physically, where physical freedom doesn't exist anyway. I want to be physically free. Really, you do? Yes. Well, you're dependent on food. What are you going to do about that? Right? I'll grow my own food. Well, the food is depending on water and the sun and the earth, not on you only. Right? And then you want to breathe. I need to breathe. I'm dependent there. So we're dependent on other things. We can't help it to be physically dependent. Impossible not to be physically dependent. Doesn't work. Right? But the bondage is my psychological dependence. This is the bondage. I'm psychologically dependent. That's where the fear, that's where the worry, the insecurity comes, because of psychological dependence. This is where it comes from there. Now, so a lot of the time the psychological dependence, the mind masks it as love. I have family members, I love them. Now, they're not acting how I want to, or I don't feel they're loving me back. Now I feel very bad, right? Somebody has family and that makes them insecure instead of secure. Isn't that funny? If really loving them, you love and they do as they want. Do you want the family to go and tell you what to do? Yeah, you know, you want in some case for them to say, hey, you know, this isn't really a good idea, because they care about you. But then you'll do and you'll do, because what can they, that's your freedom of choice, right? My expectation, attachment to this. So what we call love is really some love, but mixed with a lot of expectation, attachment, and that causes my anxiety, my problems from that. I let that drag me around like this. And this can cause somebody their whole life, till they're old, to have the world, meaning the attachment to their children, to be pulling them around here and there. Very interesting. Pure love. The pure love is just pure love. Somebody came to Swami Dayananji and said, it's very easy for you to say things like this. You don't have a family. And Swami Dayananji said, I don't have a family. How many hundreds of devotees come to me and want my help and everything? So how many people are around me all the time? So many more than just a small family you have, like this. So that's what he said. He said about this. So the thing is, the psychological dependence is the issue that comes about. The psychological dependence in moksha is freedom from the psychological dependence in this way. This is really what it is. I want to be free from that. Free externally? Yeah. Free physically? Yes. To some extent, yes, I want to be. I don't want to be too dependent. I shouldn't be over-dependent, but that's not the issue like this. Of course, dependent on I have to have food exactly in this way, in this temperature, not more or less, and with this flavor, not this slightly different. Yes, that's not physical dependence. That's, you know, just the mind having too many, wanting too many luxuries or things too many its own way. But psychological dependence in this way on things. And what happens is then, people then, in order to overcome it, they go to spirituality, and now they become psychologically dependent on guru. And now, instead of being freed, now they're dependent, psychologically dependent there. A lot of gurus then can become then also trapped in the same way, psychologically dependent on the disciple, like this. That's why they're teachers. Some teachers, they don't never say their guru, never say disciple, anything, because they don't want to fall into that sort of trap. Because that trap, now I'm going to identify with this relation. Now, this one is dependent on this person serving and everything. This one is dependent that the guru is going to give some, you know, they'll come with some problem, like to a parent, and they'll give them some. For some case at first, maybe it can be useful, but in general, in Vedanta, it's not talk that's not used, because it's really just for, you know, we want to see this truth, and that's it, to see beyond it, see beyond the individual. Where relation teacher-student is just is preliminary isn't the word, but it's just a temporary thing, because, you know, for some structure like this, but not something more than that. It's not for, because otherwise this whole psychological dependence structure come up there, can be created there as well, and then it's counterproductive. So that's not, because really it's foreseeing beyond the individual, not strengthening the individual. I'm dependent on something is strengthening the individual. Right? So in this way, one thing, Shravanam, we're listening, it's just there's teaching. There isn't, when I put myself aside, there's teaching. There isn't, you know, this teacher, and this teacher sitting and speaking, and I'm student, I'm hearing, and this person knows something I don't know, none of that. Just teaching, and that's it. Because actually, some of the good teachers say, you know, really, if there's real teaching, there's no teacher. If there's teacher, then there's some identity, some role, some ego-based identity there. There's teaching. There isn't teacher, student like this. But in any case, so the psychological dependence I have to go beyond that. And what happens is, the whole identity we're talking about then, the individual, Vedanta says, look, this whole individual, it's just the shadow. It's not the substance. It's not the essence. All these concerns, worries, everything, they belong to that shadow, the shadow person. So really, you want to see beyond this shadow person. That's where Viveka first is needed. Mukshutvam is put forth. Interesting, the last one. So Swami Tatvirananji says it's actually the hardest one for us to grasp because of this, because of the subtlety of seeing beyond eye, very difficult in this way. Very subtle. We're all caught up in it like this. And the mind is very tricky. The mind studies some Vedanta, sees some Viveka and some Vairagya, sees a little bit. But then, when it's sitting and studying, or at certain times, sees it very wisely. But then it knows how to just shut the door and forget it and do other things like this. Like the teenager who's very well behaved when the parents are there, but once they're gone, then do whatever it wants, comes back and pretend that it, you know, pretend that it's acting like an angel. That he or she is acting like an angel, perfect like this. So our mind is very tricky. We have to be very aware, alert living, right? Arnididhyasanam. Because it's very easy to hear about and think about, but in day-to-day life to live up to, then it takes a lot more to do that. So the mind is very tricky like this. So that's why it's an understanding. Something I understand then won't get in the way anymore. So I really understand something, that thing will be gone. It's not going to be something that's going to jump, have an effect anymore on myself in this way. So, in this way, understanding that the individual is just the shadow. It's not, I'm aware. When I focus on the fact that I'm aware, where's the individual? It's like you're walking in the shadows in front of you. That's when I'm self-conscious, I identify with as the individual. Now you turn, you walk towards the sun. Where'd the shadow go? Shadow can follow you, but you don't even notice it. So when my attention is on myself, the awareness, where's the individual? Right? Without the consciousness, myself, the consciousness, how can the individual even be there? It can only be there because I'm a conscious being. So it just becomes like a shadow individual, shadow personalities, just a shadow. But we take that one up, identify with it, and then because I identify with it as just a part of everything, then all its issues, problems, you know, pile up. But then when I turn my back to it, where is it? And it's only there under certain conditions, right? Somebody has a big problem, everything, but then when they really focus somewhere else, where is it? Swami Tattvirananda, he was just telling. He said that was some lady or her husband had died, and she was very sad and mourning, and she was crying and everything, you know, some days later. So then, you know, she was very sad, and so he told somebody, bring up a cup of coffee, and gave her a cup of coffee. No, I don't want this. No, please, mother, please, just have some coffee. So he said, okay. So she agreed, sat, started drinking the coffee. While she was drinking the coffee, she was fine. She was feeling fine and everything. Meaning, as identifying as the individual whose husband had passed away, then the sorrow is there. When the attention isn't there, then she's okay. Like this. So, you know, of course, things like this in life will get to us, but then, you know, from this understanding, we bounce back much easier in this way. The FIR, right? The frequency, right? Frequency, intensity, recovery period of things that come and catch us. So as we go deeper, then less frequently I'll get caught up in worry and anger, fear, all these things, less intensely, and I'll recover more quickly from it in this way. So in this way, to be freed from all these complications is to be freed from the individual, and that again is an understanding, not something I do. Somebody will say, okay, very good, what should I do to be free of that? Run very fast. You run so fast you get away from yourself. What do you mean? Wherever you run, you're there, right? In this way. So I can only understand. There's no other way to get out of it other than understanding. Thing is, understanding, one has to really think and look into it. Not just memorize or just, you know, some anecdote in this. So it takes, somebody really has to look into it. Not something that I can just, let me casually look into this. I have to really look into it. And mukshutvam, the burning desire for this, then the longing for it, it's not that, okay, I long, I want to be free, I want moksha. And while I'm at it, I also want to, you know, I also want to save this much money so that then I can retire and I can travel and see these countries that I really want to see. And I really want also to, you know, I really want to be able to move to this and this place. And I really want, et cetera, et cetera. And it doesn't work like this. Then there's a contradiction there. And the thing is, this is where mananam comes in. There's a contradiction. On the one hand, I'm looking into myself as the conscious being, which is not limited by this. Okay. On the other hand, I'm worried about what's the situation with family, what situation around me, and you know, where will I be in 10 years? Do I have enough money to take care? All these things. So which am I? There's a contradiction there. And as long as I don't resolve it, that contradiction won't go. And it takes a lot to look into. And if some contradiction is resolved, I'm free from it. But it takes a lot to look into that. A lot to look into what is the contradiction, then really analyze and look into and understand. Because nobody can do that for us. You know, Vedanta teaching there, it's very simple. It's pointed out. But then if I don't, I have to look into it. I have to understand for myself. So if I really understand, you know, This is one point also when I was at the course now. Swami Tatviram Nanjiji, he pointed and I saw, yes, this is one of the hardest parts is that not contradicting yourself. You know, really looking into it. Takes a lot to look into. That's why they say that the Vedanta masters dhira, of course, somebody whose intellect, very strong, clear intellect, but also means very brave. Takes a tremendous courage to look into this. Tremendous. Because the consequences of it are immense, right? This individual is a shadow, easy to say, but the consequence of that is immense. Meaning everything, whole story of my life, what is it? As good as a dream. And think of it. Now it seems very real. The dream was very real when you woke up. Where was it? Our childhood was very real. Where is it now? So when, let's say, I die, go, I leave and everything. Where is this whole life? Where? What was it? As good as a dream. But in the middle, it seems like it's so much because I haven't looked at it. And the dream is known as a dream. I recognize it as the dream was a dream only because I recognize it as that. As long as I don't recognize the dream as dream, it'll have some reality to it. So this, it takes a lot to do that. And there's a nice analogy that's given. In India, they give a lot of analogies from the place culture. So there, they have their elephants that are owned by people for different things, for work, or unfortunately for temples. They're all day, you know, putting the blessing there on their head. They're trained to do that instead of just living their life happily doing what they want to do. But in any case, so they take the elephant to the river and give it a nice bath to clean it up, right? So elephant is all clean and nice. They even have brush. I've seen that everything, they clean it, everything. Once they finish the bath, what does the elephant do? It goes, it takes a batch of mud or dirt and throws on itself. That's what it does. So in this way, I look into these things. Yes, this individual, it's just a shadow. It's not this. Yes, you know, whatever I get, it'll come, it'll go. I vairagya this. I do this. But then afterwards, I throw the dirt back on myself right afterwards. Like this. That's where it takes a lot to look into and understand and look into. A little bit of Swami Sivananda is an ounce of practice is better than tons of theory. Here the practice is understanding. I understand a little bit something. That understanding will just take care of all of this that it won't. You know, let's say what people think of me. If I understand it doesn't matter what people think of me. Yes, I won't cause trouble. I don't need to cause any discomfort, trouble, or any negative feeling, anybody. Yes, I don't have to. But what they really think, that doesn't really matter. I'll do what's right, what I see is right. If I really, let's say just as an example, this one I really look into, really resolve, I'm free from it. If I don't really resolve it, I'll still be thinking, what are they thinking of me? So anything like this I free myself from, that's one aspect of moksha. I'm freed from that aspect, done, like this. So here, this way, then, the desire to be liberated, I have to understand. That's why first some viveka, some discrimination, some vairagya, some dispassion need it. That's why the mind has to be, you know, not a perturbed mind, a more quiet, you know, more naturally introspective mind instead of too busy running around like this. Why that's needed. Then, through that, then I can see that freedom, liberation I'm looking for, it's through this understanding. Because without those, without the first three of the sadhana chatushtayam, or the fourfold means, then, yes, I want to be free, but what does that mean? Doesn't really make sense. I don't really know what it is I'm looking for. When I know, then I can also see what are the proper means. And then the proper means is this understanding. Because anything else you go and do, it's not going to do. Everything else is for betterment or for freedom of I, of the individual, of this idea of myself, and not freedom from this idea. Swami Sivananda calls the cancer of individuality. Isn't that an interesting how he labeled it like this? So, and he's a medical doctor, so he gave him a medical term like that in this way. So these are a few thoughts on this. Yeah, so this is this, the Dindima, the drumbeat of Vedanta from this verse. And it's a drumbeat to wake us up. Remember, it's a big drum. It's real loud. It's really to wake you up, to wake us up, one who wants to hear it, to wake us up and look at it. You know, not just a soft, you know, a sugar-coated pill to do a little, you know, a little bit, oh, let me just do a little stretch, a little breathing, oh, and feel good, and then go back to my other things. That's not Vedanta for that. Vedanta is for waking up completely. So it's not anything sugar-coated, and we shouldn't make. We should really want to look into it and really put our full effort like this to really look into it. Then, you know, that's what it's really for. So then it's not something for the lighthearted. Somebody who's serious that wants to look into, that's what it is. So, you know, more desires, really I want to look into, really have a mukshutam, this desire, all other desires will eventually get the conflagration of this one will help to, you know, burn those up, because this strong longing will help to transcend those. So let's finish with this. Om. Om. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. And now that I'm not in another time zone where it's very late, if anybody has any questions, clarifications, anything, we can spend some time. There it was just 10 o'clock at night for me when I was in the East Coast. So if any questions, anything, feel free to bring up. We have time for that. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. So,
I did have a quick question.
Yes.
I was looking for it. So you were talking a bit about frequency, intensity, and recovery.
Yes.
Yeah. When you were talking about that, you said, and I didn't quite catch it, I guess it was how to get freed from those complications, is to be free from, and I kind of lost your thoughts there.
What happens is I'm caught up in things, meaning I get worried, I get upset, I get impatient, all these things come up in us, right? So this is this FIR, all these things where in a structured way like this, most of those that I bring up, they come from this Swami Paramarthanandaji. He's also disciple Swami Dayananji, who gives very wonderful structure, takes these things, put them into very simple, clear structures. So this is something that he brought up as a measure. He says, okay, you're looking into these things. How do you measure, you know, your progress? This is what he said. So I just glossed over it because it wasn't the main topic, but what it is. So he says the measure you have is FIR. First of all, the frequency. Let's say it's we're talking about anger. You can take it any one of these things. Let's say anger. If I get angry, you know, every 3 days, and I'm looking into this, and eventually I get angry on average once a week, meaning the frequency is less. So it's an indicator that something is happening. So the second is the intensity, where before I get angry, you know, once in a while I really yell and blow off the top of my head. Other times I just really get upset. Now, yeah, I get a little angry, maybe once in a month at times that I yell for a little bit, but not so much. then the intensities become less too. And the third is recovery period, so FIR, the recovery, that before the anger would come and consume me and it would take a few hours for it to totally go away from my system, where now when it happens, yes, it lingers for a few minutes and maybe once every few weeks, okay, for another 20 minutes, whatever, it still takes a little while to simmer and go away. So then it shows that, yes, there's some progress. So it can be with anger, could be with the worry, with anxiety, which any one of these things, this measure can show me that, okay, is there some progress. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding, I would believe. You look into these things and you look a year back or a half year back and you see some differences, then it's, you know, in general. So that's what this is. Very, very nice way to gauge, to measure like this. Okay.
Thank you. That helps a lot. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So have a very good week and we will meet